welcome to Series 2, Episode 7 of The Coriolis Effect, Gruesome Deaths at Dragonmeat. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Dave, and I want to welcome you all to the Santa Lucia edition of The Coriolis Effect. So for those of you who aren't Swedish or aren't aware, the 13th of December, which is when we're recording, is a celebration in Sweden called Santa Lucia, which is the beginning of, certainly in my household with my wife and I, the beginning of Christmas. So it's celebrated with a very early morning, kind of like 5:30 or 6 in the morning, sort of big church service with songs and lots of young people walking around with candles on their heads.
With candles on their heads?
Yeah, they have they have one person who's the lead. I don't know if she's supposed to represent Santa Lucia or what exactly, but she's the lead kind of soloist and singer for the celebration. And she has a crown with candles on it, which, according to my wife, who used to do this kind of thing when she was a little girl in Sweden, is not only a health hazard and a fire hazard, but also you get some candle wax
dripping down your face.
Yeah, so it's a
kinky.
It's obviously a trial as well as as a celebration. But the traditional thing is you drink what's called glögg, which is like a mulled wine kind of thing, and you eat pepparkaka, which is ginger biscuits, which are the most delicious things on the planet. I'm not a big fan of ginger, but these are the most delicious ginger biscuits.
But these have black pepper in, do they? Do they also have black pepper as well as ginger?
The ones that we have don't. So I'm not sure they're actually sort of... I mean, I think they're
translation is pepper, which I've never heard them called peppercocken, but I make a biscuit at Christmas time that's got black pepper in.
Yes.
Which I learned off Nigella Lawson. I was just thinking they might be the same things, but maybe not.
They're probably
similar.
Anyway,
so you eat your peppercocken.
Peppercocker, and it's the start of Christmas. So I just wanted to say... Even though this episode is going to go out after Santa Lucia, happy Santa Lucia to everybody and all our Swedish listeners who will have been up since 5 o'clock if they are going to one of these celebrations. But
and effectively, this is the Christmas episode as well, so we ought to say happy Christmas as well to all our
Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yes.
We can say this again at the end, shall we?
I think we should, because, I mean, it's the 13th of December. It's quite early in the morning. It's freezing cold outside, and I'm not feeling very Christmassy right now. So give me half an hour, and I'll see if I can work up a bit of enthusiasm.
Warm you up. Get some Christmas spirit in you.
Warm me up, yes. Yes.
But what are we talking about in this episode before we get to the end when we say Happy Christmas?
So to warm us up, we have obviously some news in the world of gaming. We've got some parcels that arrived that we want to talk about.
Oh, yes.
A few other bits and bobs.
Live audio unboxing.
But what? Yeah. Unboxing is just, I know people like it, but I mean, blimey, how did that ever become a thing? It's so boring. anyway, we can talk more about that in a moment. But we're going to talk quite a lot about our experiences at Dragon Meet a couple of weeks ago. We have, we'll say a little bit about the tournament that we ran on the day. But we are going to... edit down the recordings from that over Christmas, and we'll issue a Grindbone Slavers Tournament podcast probably early in the new year with a bit of luck.
That'll be a New Year's gift to everybody.
Exactly, yeah. So we'll talk a bit about that. And then we had a great opportunity to talk to Matthias and Nils from Free League, so we recorded an interview with them, which we could talk
about. We recorded a really long interview with them, didn't we?
Well, we thought we did. What happened?
Yes. I've got a new recording device. It's great. It's really portable. It worked quite well. The sound quality is not bad. It has a little display on it where the levels go up and down as people are talking and
stuff
like that.
I think our listeners can see
what it doesn't have on the display, though, is the bit that says that the SD card's full and it's not actually recording. All the lights are on, but nobody's
at home. Including you. We've got some of that.
Yeah,
we'll talk a bit.
We've got the first few minutes of that interview, and then we had a quick break, and I turned it off and then turned it back on again, at which point I realised there was no memory. So we've got the last 10 minutes or 20 minutes. Once we've edited it down, it'll be about 10 minutes that you're going to listen to.
Yeah, so We'll talk a little bit about that interview, and we'll play that as well for you. Then you had the opportunity to have an impromptu Players in the Hammam with our friend Remy Fayomi. So we will talk a bit about that and play that interview later on. Really interesting thing, with some excellent perspectives, I think, from Remy.
Yeah, no, really, for this game in particular, I think it was a great chat.
And finally, for today, I've got a Spectral Corsair update, which I will throw in at the very end. So
let's aim for an hour, shall we? Can we get it in under the hour?
I think that's unlikely, but let's try. No, because we always say this, and we always end up at about an hour and a half.
Yeah, but let's try. Let's really try this time. Right. Do you for the hour-long episode.
Shut up then, and start talking about the world of gaming. So, our parcels. You're the man who did the unboxing, so tell us all about it.
Yes, so thank you very much. Now, I was a little bit jealous because you got your parcel a little before I got my parcel.
I did, about a week before, but I don't go into this unboxing thing, so I didn't find a room with a floor and then film the wall for 15 minutes. So
it's not just the wall. There's a cardboard box in there as well.
There is, and there is a tiny part of all the books and the cards that you then get to see slightly out of focus.
So as I wave them in front of the camera,
well, nearly in the vague direction of the camera. But anyway,
it was a rush job.
Having said
it was
that,
a
I
rush
did
job. Remember, I am trying desperately to write a PhD at this point.
Sorry, I'm only busting your chops.
On the Friday before Dragon Meat, and I thought, well, I've got to do an unboxing, but I haven't got time to do one. So the level's all a bit skew-iff as well. Anyway, if you want to look up those, seek out Forbidden Land unboxing, and indeed Emissary Lost unboxing on the YouTubes if you want to see me do that. If you haven't already, of course. But it was great getting those, and it was a little bit tense, wasn't it? The Kickstarter backers' notifications were, and still are, to some degree, getting a little bit tense, because some people still haven't got their copies of Forbidden Lands.
That does seem to be the case, doesn't it?
Most have, but delivery at this particular time of year has proved to be a little overwhelming for Games Quest, the distribution company. I want to rant now. Can I rant?
Go on then. Seeing it's Christmas.
RPGs are slightly a victim of their own success. Back in the day, you would... I was going to say you'd write to Greg Stafford at Chaosium and order RuneQuest or whatever. But of course we didn't. We lived in England, so we'd write off to Games Workshop. And back in the day, I'm pretty sure that... Ian Livingstone and Steve Jackson would pick up the game that you'd ordered, stick it in the envelope, you know, write your address on it and give it to the postman, and you'd eventually get it. Now, the creators of these games, the commission, you know, they're selling so many. I don't expect the guys at Free Elegant to have their houses full of their own games, but that's how it worked originally. And now they don't. So now they commission Games Quest. Games Quest commission OCS or whatever, who seem to be in for a lot of the stick.
Some tracking,
the
tracking service.
With our international backers on that one. OCS commission Hermes. Hermes, as we're all aware, is, you know, doesn't particularly treat its drivers terribly well. The drivers are all effectively self-employed. They've all got to get so many jobs in so that they can... you know, pay for the van that Hermes has kindly loaned them the money for, or not in some cases. It seems there's all these chains of people taking profit out of the delivery thing. And of course, we all expect delivery to be as cheap as possible as well, because, you know, let's face it, you know, there's lots of free delivery options out there. I'm feeling overwhelmed by capitalism at the moment, I think, is my problem.
Yeah.
And all these people taking a slice of the pie, where once upon a time, as I say, it was a bloke who'd made a game, and if you wrote to him and gave him some money, he'd stick it in the envelope and send it to you. And that's gone. And now we've got all this. Rant over. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Rants are okay once in a while, if you're given permission in advance, which you were on this occasion. That's fine.
I did request permission.
You did. So I'm going to respond to your rant, because I agree in large part, I think. But I do remember back in the day, you know, it was always allow 28 days for delivery. So it always going to take a month. And then it usually took 6 weeks anyway. And actually, with most things, and I think the Kickstarter-backed projects are probably a bit different, but with most things, the delivery is going to be pretty swift. You order it, and certainly with some services, you get it the next day. Less so. I mean, Amazon Prime is the example I would use. But in the last couple of years, I think so many people have taken it up that the next day delivery guarantee that you used to get with Amazon Prime, like when I was first a member of it, that doesn't really happen anymore.
That's a bit of an aspiration nowadays, isn't
it? Yeah, whereas it used to be a guarantee, and that was the USP for having it. I think the difference with the Kickstarter thing is it's all being done in one big go. So, you know, mm-hmm. it's like everybody's ordered at the same time. So I think that changes the dynamic. I mean, having said that, it's quite clear that things have gone wrong with the Forbidden Lands. And not just Forbidden Lands, but with Cult and Yinderos the Darkest Star was a bit late, although not very much, only a couple of weeks. So I think it's, like you say, the system is so overcomplicated now, and partly because I think they're trying to deliver everything in one go, or pretty much everything in one go. We had a conversation with Nils and Matthias when we saw them at Dragon Meet about it.
It was actually part of the interview, but it's a part that we missed out on.
Yeah.
Because one of the other things, of course, that's worth talking about is a number of people ordered extra player books, extra players' handbooks for Forbidden Lands, and didn't get those in the parcel.
No. I think, I mean, clearly...
And that's not actually Games Quest's fault or any of the distribution line, is it?
No, that isn't. But I think one thing that both Nils and Matthias were very open about was that things hadn't gone as well as they should have done on this particular Kickstarter across the not only with the Games Quest delivery thing, but also the admin error or whatever it was that led to those books not being
printed. They hadn't ordered enough books.
But they do seem to have taken that very seriously, and certainly in talking to them, they were genuinely, I think, upset for their fans and their customers that it hadn't gone very well. I got a real sense that they were annoyed because it was bad for Free League because it might tarnish their reputation a little bit. They were genuinely pissed off that the game hadn't landed on the players' doorsteps when they wanted to. And I think they're taking some steps now to rectify that, which is good. I think holding your hands up when things haven't gone well and saying, yes, you know, the cock up, what can we do to fix it? I think, you know, let's give them some credit for recognising where it's not gone well and doing what they can to try and rectify it. Although that, if I still hadn't received Forbidden Lands today, I would be gruntling about it as well, as I'm sure those who still haven't got it are feeling a bit bruised. But
and you're right. I think, because now, as you said, with Christmas, it doesn't bode well for any delivery service that you're going to necessarily get anything that comes to you now before Christmas.
No, although I get really annoyed when delivery companies use the, oh, it's Christmas, as an excuse for shit service. Because it's not like Christmas has come out of the blue. Kind of look at your diary.
Same time every year.
Look at your diary and you can see that Christmas tends to land about the 25th of December every year. So plan for it, make a contingency. And I guess a lot of them do. I guess the volumes go up so enormously that it's difficult to manage that well. But every year you get a chance to practice it and refine your processes. So come on, guys. Don't use it as an excuse for being shit. Use it as an opportunity to be really good. Anyway,
let's talk more positively.
That's my rant over, and I didn't even ask for permission.
No, you didn't ask for permission. So take that entire rant back.
We'll edit that out, shall we? Yeah, okay.
We'll put it in the next episode. but actually, we did then get these fabulous things through the door, didn't we?
It is brilliant. I mean, the Forbidden Lands box and the books and everything with it, with one exception, which I'll mention, are absolutely brilliant. I love it. The quality is great. The writing is great. It has got that real retro feel. The one thing I am disappointed in, I think the dice are shit. I hate them. I hate them.
In what manner do you hate the dice?
I just don't like the design. You know, it's just... I don't know. I just don't like it. Similarly, I don't like the new Coriolis dice either. They're even worse, actually. So anyway, it's a minor point, but I've got plenty of other, I've got plenty of other dice to roll.
I have a bit of a problem with the dice in the way they're packaged, because, of course, I bought two sets because I knew that you'd need more than, you know, you've got multiple sets of Mutant Year Zero dice.
And they're great. I love those dice. They're really clean and clear. And anyway, carry on.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? They're not actually necessarily terribly clear with all that decoration on, no. I guess. And that chain decoration doesn't particularly, you know, the chain edging, which looks lovely on the books in gold, doesn't particularly add to the dice.
No.
And definitely doesn't add to the clarity of the dice.
Certainly not for old farts like me, who's, you know, I'm getting on a bit. My eyes don't work as well as they used to, particularly in dark lights, which we often play in a darkened room, particularly if we're away on our weekend away. So make them clear, make them big. You know, I'm an old man, you know.
Yeah, this is a retro game for retro gamers. You know, we were all gaming in the early 80s, so give us a dice that we can read now.
So we're at least 50 years old. Yeah, exactly.
Through our bifocals.
If we have them.
Oh, well, there's your problem, mate. You haven't got your bifocals, you see. That's your problem. It's not the dice's fault.
Trouble is, when I get bifocals, I am officially an old man. And I'm going to resist that as long as I possibly can. Even if that means I've got to carry around three sets of glasses and none of them work properly for everything. Anyway.
Sadly, after my little turn a couple of weeks ago, I am now on blood thinners and statins. So I am officially an old man now. I'm going to have one of those little pill boxes with days of the week on that I put my bloody pills on for the rest of my life.
Oh, no. But you're feeling all right.
Yeah, I'm feeling fine.
Excellent.
Back to normal. So let's carry on. Now, I'm interested, though. We got slightly different versions. And what I didn't get the opportunity to do when we bought out both our games to Dragon Meat is actually compare side by side your box to my box. Because you've got the deluxe box, haven't you?
I have. So, yes, I'm not sure what's different. Actually, between that and your box.
Well, I must admit, it looks to me, I'd imagine it was going to come as you were going to get a kind of slip cover over the box with the picture of the dragon on. But you've actually got an entirely replacement box, but it's not like, you know, a particularly special box. It's just got different artwork on.
Yeah.
I think. And I quite like my picture of a dragon on my box. Mm-hmm. So, I'm kind of glad I didn't go for your option, but I mean, yours is very nice. You know, it's a box that's more in keeping with the covers of the books. But
It's a minor point.
So there's
point,
that.
Really. Yeah,
and we also got, of course, Coriolis Emissary Lost campaign a week later. There seem to be less problems with distributing that with Games Quest, although I did see somebody today complaining their parcels arrived and it's got everything except the actual Emissary Lost campaign.
Oh, no.
So something went a little bit wrong there. Mm. But
well, I got that on the same day that I got my hard copy of Yindaros the Darkest Star come through the door as well. In fact, in the same postman. So I had all these goodies arrive all at the same time. I was spoiled for choice. And then, you know, not being allowed to read Emissary Lost. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you. Well, I'm so tempted. I think we
now I've got the hard copy. I'm so tempted just to read it because it's... we better play that soon because I will. The temptation will overcome me at some point.
Actually, that's a lovely segue because we cannot play it soon. So maybe you should read it. We just won't run that campaign. And we can't play it soon because in our last episode, you and I were discussing the fact that we couldn't choose between whether you wanted me to run more Coriolis or more Forbidden Lands.
Yeah.
And so we asked the public in a great referendum.
And it's similar kind of result as well, isn't it? So in a year's time, I'm going to do a vote of no confidence in you because you haven't done either of them.
But I'm going to win that vote. And we're going to carry on with a game that nobody wanted to play.
Yeah, that nobody likes and nobody wants to play. And we'll hold up the Coriolis Effect podcast as the most shambolic, pathetic bunch of muppets the world has ever bloody seen. Anyway, I don't want to turn this into a political podcast. Yeah. But what the fuck are you doing?
So, yeah, back to the poll that our listeners actually had a chance to vote in, because not everybody got a chance to vote in the Brexit referendum. Who listens to us anyway?
No, that's true.
And we put a poll out on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Google. And it was kind of interesting seeing how the different audience responded. So I got very quick, immediate response from Twitter, which then, you know, which was with people responding quicker on there than on either of the other two platforms to begin with. But after day one, actually, you know, that was lost in the Twitter sphere and didn't get maybe one or two more votes on day two. G Plus did quite well, and that was actually really good fun to watch, because that was going up and down, and one was in the lead and the other was in the lead, and the one was in the lead and the other was in the lead. And in the end, the G Plus community, I think we got 64 votes on that, and they were dead even, 50-50. So they were no help at all, frankly, for helping us make a decision. You G Plusers, work harder at making your mind up, please.
Well, they obviously did make their mind up, but half of them made their mind up one way and half of them made their mind up the other, you know. So we can't really blame our lovely G Plus audience for not giving us a clearer mandate for Forbidden Lands.
I mean, you know, I mean, it was kind of reassuring to see that they liked both the things. So that's good. Twitter, I should say, had come out firmly in favour of Forbidden Lands, but they were only about 16 votes on that in the end. We got almost 100 votes on Facebook, and in a way, I guess they tilt the argument to which the game that they chose, and that was Forbidden Lands. So we're not going to be running Coriolis again around our table for at least a few months until we've got a couple of Forbidden Lands adventures under our belts. So maybe I should let you read that book. And particularly because Ricard Ancoya said some really nice things about us on Facebook. Did you, not Facebook, on G Plus. Did you see that?
No.
Ah, so okay. I posted.
How did I miss that?
The unboxing. I don't know how you missed it, actually. Let me just see if I can find it and I'll see what he said.
So anyway, whilst you're finding that, I think for me, there's real mixed feelings here, because I want to play both. And unfortunately, we just don't have the time or the bandwidth
to do that.
No. So I'm really excited that we're going to be playing some more Forbidden Lands, because it's brilliant. I'm quite disappointed that we're not going to be playing more Coriolis soon, because that's brilliant too.
I'd mentioned in the unboxing video that that we're obviously on the credits page, which is really nice, as playtesters, even though we hadn't playtested. And I hypothesised it might be because, Ricard liked her idea for her mam so much, he put one in the campaign. And he replied saying, "And yes, your names are there due to the hamam and the rules discussions regarding tiered talents and some of your faction talks. All good inspiration," he said, to which I replied, "Thank you." And he says, I could have summed it up with, "Because you're awesome," smiley face.
Excellent.
So,
how the hell did I miss that? I don't know.
I don't know. Of course, you're not. I didn't tag you in anywhere there, and I don't know whether you saw another unboxing post. You thought you didn't look at my wall anymore. I guess.
Maybe. Well. Thank you, Ricard. You're awesome too. and once Matthew's let me read The Emissary Lost, I'll be able to say a bit more about how awesome you are.
Yeah, and we'll work out outside this podcast when you're allowed to read that.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Right, we were trying to bring this in at under an hour.
But we've got one more bit, World of Gaming. Can we quickly give a shout out to the Nibiru Kickstarter that's currently running? Yep. Nibiru, we talked about it a year ago. We interviewed
Federico.
Is his name Philippe?
Federico,
that's last year at Dragon Meet. And just for those who are interested by that, that Kickstarter is running now. It'll still be running when you hear this. So join it if you're interested.
They've already hit their pledge, but obviously let's get in there and open up some of those stretch goals.
Brilliant. Yeah, cool. Let's do that.
Dragon Meet.
Now, Dragon Meet.
Yes. Oh, well, I had a great time. I think for me, it being the second time that we went, not having been before, mm-hmm. you know, last year was the first time I went as a participant in the podcast zone. And I felt like I knew what I was doing this time, whereas last time I sort of walked around kind of a bit headless chicken, like not really knowing kind of what to do. Knowing a few other people, feeling a lot more comfortable in that space. And it was great. And I really enjoyed the opportunity to talk to a lot more people than I did last year. And of course, the thing that really helped with that was the Grindbone tournament. Now, we have mentioned, I think, a bit earlier that we're going to do a podcast for that. But I just wanted to say very quickly here and now, thank you to Lars, Paul, Sam, Matthias, AJ and Ben, Julian and Peter, Ziz, Nils, Chris, Frank, Joseph, Mike, Anil and Justine, our players, for making it such a great experience and taking the fortunes, be they good or bad, so well and with such a smile on their face. Because some of the fortunes were pretty bad and everyone seemed to enjoy
it. They did, yes. Some people lasted longer than others. Some people lasted a lot longer than others. I did just want to, in that name list, Anil, of course, rolled up a character, but it wasn't he who actually played it. Who played it? Have you got her name?
Madonna. Madonna played it.
Madonna.
I don't know.
Madonna is the name she chose.
I don't know her real name. But Madonna's such a good name, and it seemed to fit her really well.
Yes.
So I think she'll be Madonna to me from now on, anyway. But yes, good call. Good shout. Absolutely. Yes.
They were great. They took it all in good sport. They, I think, really enjoyed it, and it was really good fun. I was surprised by how much fun it was. You were being the main game master. I was kind of helping out with the rules. I wasn't expecting to be as entertained by everybody. It's a really basic premise. We also played in a fun game that the Formal Gamer ran.
Yes.
I'm sure you'll be hearing it on their podcast
as
well.
That was really
good. He always does some fun games that are kind of surreal and funny in their own right. And at the end of the day, all we were doing was a fight. The most boring bit of any actual play podcast is the fight. But it was such good fun to witness while we were there. And I think it'll be really good fun to listen to as well.
Yeah, so I hope so.
Really want to say thank you to all our players.
I'd like to also...
And people who rolled up characters.
Yeah, I'd like to say thank you as well to all those people who turned up to watch the final. So we actually had a little crowd for the final, which is excellent. And I'd also like to say sorry to those people who came along but were too late to get into the competition. So we had a number of people come to us who wanted to join in. I'm really sorry that we didn't have time and space to get everybody that wanted to play. But come along next year. We'll do something similar. Maybe not exactly the same, but we'll see. We'll do something next year. So get in earlier and you could be on the on the tournament, whatever it is, next year.
And we ought to say sorry to your brother, Tony, who we kicked out so that we could let... was it Justine who joined us in Tony's place?
It was. I mean, and say that we kicked him out. Tony actually volunteered to step out because he is part of the Coriolis Effect crew. You know, he's in all of our games. He's
played Forbidden Lands before.
He's a really nice guy. And I felt sorry for him for doing that. But he helped out actually running the game, which was really helpful because we'd underestimated how long things would take. And the first, we gave 15 minutes per bout. The first bout took 30 minutes. The second bout took 20 minutes. So we were well behind schedule almost from the start.
Yes.
But Tony's help.
Well, to be honest, we hadn't underestimated. We'd estimated about the time that it took for the whole thing in the end. But we had to truncate that because we lost an hour off our slot. Remember?
That's true. So yeah.
We did think we could get away with truncating it, and actually we were wrong. We couldn't. Well, we did it in 2.5 hours as opposed to 3, but 3 hours was our original estimate.
Yeah.
So I think you did pretty well, Dave.
Thank you. But that 2.5 hours was a real stretch. It was hard work.
Yes.
It was pushing it. It was no breaks or anything. It was just cracking on. But it was a team effort, and I think it would have been impossible to have done it on my own, or I think for you and I to have done it, just the two of us. Having Tony there as well as part of the team was critical to us succeeding.
So yeah, actually,
thank you very much, Tony. That was great. Cheers, brother.
Brilliant. And I've got to say that replacing Tony with Justine, would he have rolled the dice that Justine rolled?
No, I think. Well, that's,
we won't spoil it. No,
but that is one of the, there are several highlights from that, and one of Justine's actions is one of those highlights. But yeah.
Oh yes.
Yes. But yes. So Dragon Meat was fabulous.
Well, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Callum as well. I just wanted to thank him and everybody else on the podcast saying, because it was, I agree with you. I'm a bit more of an old hand at Dragon Meat than you are. So I think I felt more comfortable last year and maybe made better use of my time last year. But the podcast zone this year was a big improvement on last year. I think Callum,
agreed,
learned a lot from the previous year. It was a lot more organized. He roped more people in and formalized the organization. And, you know, I think that's a lot of work for him beforehand, but it really paid dividends. And the podcast zone was a real pleasure to be part of. So I just want to shout out to Callum.
Absolutely.
And to Dragon and to, somebody else, Kat as well.
Yeah.
And to Dan.
Dan, of course. Yeah.
And all our other fellow podcasters.
Of course. So I think, I mean, for this year, the podcast zone was moved to a different location. So last year, we were right at the front door. And I think people felt that we were being pushed into a bit of a dark corner and out of the way for this year. But actually, I think it worked so much better. Because the year before, it was just manic around the podcast zone. There wasn't enough space. There was people hanging about. Yes, the idea was you got the footfall coming through the door so you could draw people in. But I didn't feel that we really lacked for footfall. We had a lot of good conversations. It was a lot less chaotic.
And it's really nice to have people like Paul come and find us, you know.
Yeah.
People knew to look for us and they came and said hi. So, yeah, I've got no problem about the location at all.
No, me neither. I thought it was good.
And as you say, quite apart from the organisation that Callum put in, I think a real benefit was you suggesting that we book a room at the hotel. Because then we could enjoy the evening, and we had a really great dinner with Nils and Matthias, and I invited somebody along whose name I've just forgotten.
Chris
from Darker Days Radio, because he was looking like a little bit of a lost soul after Dragon Meat, and I said, "Oh, come and join us." Partly because I wanted to pick his brains about Vampire the Fifth Edition, but we had a great dinner and a really good chat, and we recorded some of it.
Yes. Okay.
So shall we listen to that?
Let's listen to what we've got left.
Right, here we are at Wagamama's in Hammersmith on Saturday, the 1st of December, just after Dragon Meet. And we are here with Nils and Matthias from Free League. And Dave here, Matthew, and Chris from
Darker Days Radio as a wild card.
I invited Darker Days Radio because I realised I listened to a lot of the podcasts that joined us in the podcast zone, and a lot of them are actual plays. But when I listened to an episode of Darker Days Radio, I thought, hold on, here's a couple of blokes talking about a game they love and interviewing Swedes. So these are our close brothers, anyway. So we've invited Chris along, partly because you had nothing to do for dinner either.
It was dinner, great company, and I'm going to learn a lot listening to this, so I'll let you carry on.
So I think the first question I want to ask is, a lot has happened in the world of Free League and Jan Ringen in this last year.
What's Jan Ringen? What is Jan Ringen?
It's some old company that everyone's forgotten about.
We used to be enemies, and now we're frenemies.
So I think I just wanted to ask, what would be your reflections on the last year? You know, what's been the kind of the... You know, you're on a journey here, obviously. You've come together.
It's been a lot of talks. I mean, we've been in negotiations about this for like a year or so.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of talks.
Serious talks, because we've been talking about this since we restarted Jan Ringen in 2014, 2014. Yeah. So, but this last year we had serious discussions, and then those serious discussions turned into negotiations, and you know,
pretty serious negotions. I mean, there's
some tense moments in darkened rooms with like lots of smoke and
semi-tense. I mean, it was good. It was good meetings, and we had lots of. It took its time.
Yeah,
but I think we all realized that we probably needed to do this, and we wanted to do it as well.
Yeah, more of the latter, I would say. We really, really wanted to do this. We just had to come to some terms that we were both equally not liking.
Yeah. We were equally unhappy with the deal we arranged.
Well, if only we can get that for Brexit, then I'll be happy.
Yeah. But,
now that's behind us, and I must say that starting working together for real has been, I would call it smooth sailing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's effortless. Excellent. As the song goes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit of getting to know each other and getting to know. I mean, adjusting how you work and so on. But it's been easy and it's been positive. I mean, it's really good.
Yeah.
If it would be bad, we wouldn't have said so here. But
no, that's true.
Obviously.
A lot's gone on this year. You've merged. We've seen all sorts of games come out, games or supplements have come out. You've even had a hand in Chris's favourite game, Vampire 5, because you guys did the layout for that. What are your plans for the future?
I should say that we don't know yet. Not exactly, because in January we hope to be able to have a real kickoff where we get together all the whole team for like a weekend or something and strategize for the future. At the moment we are working on products that, you know, that we have already started working on our separate sides. So what has happened is that primarily, I mean, you have also been helping with some Syndrome stuff, but mostly it's me and Martin who has come into the production team when it's Coriolis, for instance, and some other stuff that's in the pipe.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing, I think what Matthias is dancing around the question because we can't really say. We're working on I think at least three new role-playing games for next year, which we can't speak
new
about.
New brands.
Yeah,
will that be new game engines?
No, all of these will be a variation of Year Zero.
Right. Okay.
So these have been in production for like 2 years. So they will be released next year. Some we don't know exactly when. And then we have expansions for products. So we have the Crusader Kings board game.
We have more. Which is what you wouldn't tell us about last year when we saw you.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And then
there's a pattern here.
Come on, it is a pattern.
You're like, give us a scoop. Give us the cost.
So it's a lot. And we're also doing more books. We're actually doing François Barranger's. We did a very, very nice art book for Call of Cthulhu. Nice. The novel is...
There is a novel called Call of Cthulhu as well as the game.
Yeah.
But this is
Into the Mountains of Madness?
Short story. That's what I'm saying.
Novellas.
That text, but with like really, really beautiful large-scale paintings. Nice. And it's like a big art book. And we did it in Sweden. It's like a really good, nice success. And in France, it's a French guy that made an art. So we're going to do a Kickstarter on that.
In English, translation.
So it's going to be great, I think. But that's just a pure art book. So we have lots of different stuff going on. But it's, basically we have a problem finding slots for everything. I mean, we have a little bit of too much stuff going on.
Yeah. So this is why you've got to have your strategy meeting in January.
But
that's more long-term.
Clearly you need like, advice and guidance from some other community. So, so my invite's been lost in the post. I assume.
Yeah. Okay,
we don't need Matt.
I've got a pet project I want to ask about. Yeah. I've seen it in your Swedish language Facebook posts. I have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
It's October Lambs.
Yeah.
Gorgeous graphic design on there. Sure. I really like that.
It's a Simbrum graphic designer, Johan Noor.
It actually won a prize for best graphic design in last year. I would agree. I think it's probably our most striking graphic design, but that's because it's based on old Russian avant-garde art. So it's really like Soviet propaganda art from 1920s. Mm. It is a game. We haven't actually made this game ourselves. We picked it up from in the game creator, the same guy that made the White Tack, if you know what that is. White Tack is a really minimalistic D&D hack, which is really has like a cult following. It's really good. Oktoberland was released like 10 years ago in Swedish and made no splash at all. Back then it was written like basically as a book. It was written as a literary text. Yeah. Right, so you read it like a novel, which was like a fun experiment, but no one really got it.
Didn't
so
work very well.
Then he contacted us like a couple of years ago, wanted to do a second edition. And we thought it would be a fun experiment. So we got this really, really excellent guy, Johan Noor, made the art, and it looks. I mean, it's. I wasn't personally involved in this project, but it looks more like an art book than an RPG.
Okay,
that sounds incredibly intriguing when you said like that Soviet propaganda.
Yeah,
art. So it's all these really stark, straight lines, very angular.
Yeah, exactly like that.
It's gorgeous.
Modernistic.
Exactly like that. And
are we going to see a version of this in English?
No. Because
not by Free League in any case.
No, but because it's a good game. It's like a niche in a niche in a niche in a niche.
Okay,
it's
not a big enough market to go for.
No,
and we don't know if the creator wants it translated.
Right, okay.
No, but and also it doesn't use our engine. It uses Fate. And I mean it is a great. I mean I didn't talk about the setting. The setting is
so. Are you just publishing it then?
Well, it's actually we published it, but we did a lot of editing and stuff. But it's not our creation. It's this guy Christian Mastam is called. He's really really good guy. But the setting is basically some kind of, it's not steampunk, but it's like a Russian the Russian Revolution, but it's mashed up with some fantasy and science fiction elements. But it's very much based on Russia and like Tolstoy and all this Russian literary stuff, mixed with this role-playing kind of troops. So you have strange creatures out on the taiga, you have this strange meta plot and this strange mist and so on. So it's really evocative setting. It's a really, really special. I like it, but it's a strange beast.
Okay.
So that is something you will not see next year from Free League.
No.
Do you want us to list like what we know is coming from different titles that is announced already?
Things that you've announced. Let's just remind our listeners what
they
could be playing. I'm just
gonna say the wrong stuff, so I'm not sure.
Okay, I will try this. Sure. Yeah, for Simbarum, we have Part 4 in the Throne of Thorns.
Yeah,
Simbar, the Mother of Darkness. And we also probably will have the Game Master's Guide release later next year.
Okay. So
they start doing it right.
Are they going through Kickstarter? Are they
The Mother of Darkness? Absolutely, because that's what we've been doing all along with the campaign, with Throne of Thorns campaign. So that maybe Game Master's Guide will be part of that Kickstarter somehow. Or anyway, Mutant, we are right now running a Kickstarter for Elysium.
Yeah, you forgot about that.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to list what we know is coming. We are currently running a Kickstarter.
Back that,
we have. You have to correct me here, but we did run a Kickstarter for Things from the Flood.
Yeah.
I hope it will release next year, most certainly, right?
No, yes. I mean, absolutely. We will send out the beta before Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm working on this right now.
I'm quite excited about that, because I kind of see that's Tales from the Loop growing up into Cthulhu-ish.
Yeah, it's more. I mean, the stakes are higher because you can die. I mean, in the first game, we talked about this in the podcast.
Yeah,
you were kind of upset that you couldn't die in Tales of the Loop.
But then I did say that actually I played Tales of the Loop and I loved it as a GM.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of Things from the Flood.
Yeah, taking it takes it one level further, and you can actually migrate your kids from the first game to into teens. And they get all kinds of new problems, and you know, being unhappily in love, and you know, everything.
And I think for me, as a GM running that kind of game, taking the characters that maybe we had for our Tales from the Loop game into something which is much darker.
Yeah.
For me as a GM, I love that. That's great. Might not be great for you guys.
We have
but
to do at least the other three.
Yeah, we can add to the list of things we are working on. We are working on other stuff for the Tales universe, but we haven't announced those yet, and we don't.
No, we have one we have announced, and that's the campaign book, which we're going to release shortly after Things from the Flood.
It's going to be,
it's going to be a campaign written by Richard Antroia.
Speaking about Richard Antroia, we come to Coriolis, because one of my next big projects as a project lead is the second part of the
MS3 Lost.
Or the sequel to MS3 Lost.
Well, he's the lead writer, Richard.
And we will start working on that. Or we have slowly but surely. We are gearing
working
up.
And
we'll start working on for real.
It's going to be, I would say it's going to be a little bit divisive maybe in the family.
Right, okay.
I won't say anything.
No.
Well, I haven't even been allowed to read Emissary Lust because he's running the campaign that I'm playing in.
So. I'm not saying anything more.
So, but that's what we can say about the brands we already have in play.
Yeah, we're also working on a big campaign for Forbidden Lands. Which is, I think I'm allowed to say it's going to be taking place a little bit up north.
It's going to be whisper like, about that.
Exactly. And it's a really, really cool setting, and it's going to be like a new campaign. It's going to be a new map, and it's going to be like a whole new way of playing that game on. But it's,
so is this the map that sits on top of the map? We've
exactly.
Got right?
Opening
a new
maybe,
zone.
Maybe Nils. Is spoiling here?
Okay,
it's already spoiled. It's already spoiled.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
then we're safe.
Yeah. That's gonna be a big thing. But I'm not sure when
you
it's gonna
it
be released.
First, guys.
So yeah, and some small stuff as well, I guess.
Are there any more board games you got in?
Yes, but we can't speak about them.
Yeah, just the same as last.
Oh my God, bloody hell. After all this time, you'd think at least they'd give us a scoop. You know,
We don't deserve a scoop. I think
we do.
It's
quite late. It's probably time to call it off.
20 past 10.
Going over
it is late.
Somewhere.
So thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
We've already talked a bit about some of the stuff that was missed out of that interview. So we talked quite a lot about the Kickstarter and the delivery problems and the missing players' handbooks. So we've discussed that already. But actually, you know, it's really interesting listening to plans for next year. I'm particularly interested in there seems to be more Mutant Year Zero coming, and I thought Elysium was going to be the last Mutant Year Zero release, so I'm kind of intrigued to see what they come up with there.
Yeah, me too. I mean, there's a lot of Mutant Year Zero stuff. You know, there's been a real pace. You know, it's relentless almost in terms of the stuff that's been coming out. So it will be interesting to see where else they feel they can take that particular franchise, as it were.
Yeah. But again, I want to say thank you to Nils and Matthias for being such good company that evening. Did they in the end buy you a drink? Because we wouldn't let them, they got quite cross. We wouldn't let them buy anything.
Yes, after you sloped off, the three of us.
I'm an old man. I can't stay up past midnight anymore.
Well, I did get the sense that kind of Nils and I were kind of in having a beer mood. I'm not sure everybody else was. So we ended up in a pub across the road from where we had dinner, and we stayed there for another two or three beers. And then, as Matthias was wisely advising that it might be time to give up and go home, I was pressing to have one more beer, which we didn't have. And then the following day, Nils texted me saying, "I'm glad we didn't have that beer because I've got a really bad hangover." Why? They're very wise, very wise. Unusual for Swedes who are out on the piss, actually, because they normally drink like madmen. But so we had a bit more of a conversation. They were talking a little bit about a sort of strategy weekend that Free League are planning to have early in the new year, I think, to take forward what they're doing and move ahead and make some decisions about maybe the direction they want to go, which is great. I asked for an invite, fully expecting...
You didn't get one.
Fully expecting to be told no. I was told no. So that's fine.
So your expectations were realised.
Exactly. Well, it was a bit of a drunken punt. You know, I mean, if they fancied to have a, I said a drunken punt, by the way,
a representative of the audience.
Okay, moving very swiftly on. Right. Anyway,
moving on.
If they did fancy having a representative of the media there to note down for the record things that they wanted to come out, let me know when it is, and I'll jump on a plane and come right over. I'll be delighted to. To be their media stooge.
Or maybe after they've had all the rows and arguments that they're going to have over this this away day that they're planning, and they've come out with an agreed way forward, maybe we can grab an interview with them over Skype or something and
see
what share what their plans are.
Although I would like to point out, I've watched on Netflix and Amazon, I'm not sure which one it is. There's a series of programs called All or Nothing. And the ones I've watched have been about American football, because that's a particular interest of mine. And it's a fly on the wall sort of documentary charting the season of a particular team. So we should have an All or Nothing free league where I am the fly on the wall charting.
You're the fly on the wall.
Charting what's going on and drinking a lot.
Give up your job, move to Sweden and just, what, stalk the free league team?
What, more than we already do? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, as you say, my expectations were gently managed. but yeah, so I think the other things we did talk about, we did briefly have a conversation. I asked a question about how they felt Simba Room as a game and Forbidden Lands as a game would work under the same company banner. And we had a good conversation about that, which frankly is a bit fuzzy in my head because I'd had a few beers, but there was, I think, you know, the basic conclusion was that the two games are actually very, very different. We've talked many times before about the differences in setting, the difference in dice mechanic, and I think you could, Matthias was talking about a supplement they're looking to work on, which is going to bring out a bit more of the, I don't like to use it in this context, but the hex crawl, exploring through the forest kind of elements of the game, which there are some in that already. But that kind of means if you want to play that kind of hex crawl game, but you love Simba Room and you don't want to transfer to Forbidden Lands to do it, you will be able to do that quite comfortably in a Simba Room setting. So I think they explained it very well, and it also gives them the bandwidth to focus a bit more on really developing that content in a intelligent and exciting way, rather than, you know, not having the time or the bandwidth to do it justice. So I think that's some people might think two fantasy games in one place like that, inevitably they're going to compete with one another. But I think they are sufficiently different, and I think Free League are quite comfortable with those differences.
Yeah, although it does remind me of an anecdote, which I don't know whether you were around for, but I had a chat with Matthias earlier in the day, and he was behind the Modiphius stand selling Simba Room and Forbidden Lands to all comers. But he was complaining to me. He said, you know, on the social media, everybody's going about how beautiful Forbidden Lands is. Beautiful, they keep saying. He says, that's not a beautiful game. And he held up Simba Room. This is a beautiful game.
Yeah, that was Matthias saying
that.
That's
black and white.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, obviously, Nils would probably have an entirely different opinion, but Matthias's true love
is Simbaru.
He's still Simbaru.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And he wasn't quite digging the fact that the beautiful Martin Grip artwork in Simbaru was, it wasn't being compared. Let's be frank. When people talk about Forbidden Lands being beautiful, they're not talking about the sort of atmospheric painting that goes on in Simbaru. They're talking about
it's such a different style.
Nostalgia feeling. Now, we also had another interview, which I grabbed.
You did.
Earlier in the day. And I think this is really interesting because I happened to walk past a crowd and a guy was showing Coriolis to some other people, the book he'd got. And I leant over in the way that any champion of the game should do, barged into their conversation and in passing kind of went, "That's a really good game. Yes, you should buy that," sort of thing. And stepped away, but actually then got in a conversation with them. And the guy showing his copy of Coriolis to the others was a guy called Remy Fayomi. And I thought this was a wonderful opportunity to interview him about playing Coriolis for our Players in the Hammam occasional feature. And this is the interview. Okay, so we're at Dragon Meet, and here's a Players in the Hammam for you. Remy, would you like to introduce yourself?
Okay, I'm Remy Fayomi, and I'm a GM. I run Coriolis quite often. I'm also a player. I love Coriolis, the setting. It's a very different space opera. In fact, I knew Freya Ligan as a business because of Coriolis, the Coriolis Kickstarter, and what attracted me was the art, the setting, the themes, and also the dice system, because I'm a fan of dice pools. It's a D6 dice pool.
I'm a big fan of dice pools, too. I'm not a fan of the D20. Tell us about your campaign, Remy.
Well, I've run some of the campaigns that they've published. I've run some of the adventures. The first adventure I ran was about before the Dying Ship. I think they had another little campaign they gave us during the Kickstarter. Maybe it was the Dying Ship. So I've run most of them. I supported the Emissary Lost because, again, there'll be more stories.
Yeah.
I've run some simple one-shots whereby I just, for example, I actually have my own characters I just created now because I grew up in a country, I grew up in the north of Nigeria.
All right.
So the Islamic-themed culture is, a lot of my friends are engineers, architects. So the idea of having
mix of Islam and architecture.
So it was very easy for me to get into it, and it's very easy for me to, on the fly, create themes and characters. So it's so natural to me. It's different from me reading a Tolkien-esque novel, which is not something, so from my culture.
No,
so
very, very specifically Anglo-centric mythology.
So I have to, I love it, but it's different because it doesn't come as natural. And that's the beautiful thing with Coriolis. I love science fiction. I love science. I love reading all these science magazines. I love Cosmos, especially the new one by Neil deGrasse Tyson. And bringing my background and the culture makes it so easy. So as a GM, it makes my job as a GM smooth.
Brilliant. But I'm interested about your gaming history. If you came from North Nigeria, when did you start getting into games?
Okay, now this is sometimes it's embarrassing because my first gaming system was actually only third edition D&D. I've never played first edition, never played second edition. I started role playing, you would say, quite late.
Well, I mean, everybody's got to start somewhere, though, haven't they?
well, I meet people and say, "Oh, we've played this game. Is it Red Box? What is the Red Box?"
Yeah. So third edition D&D.
Yes.
Was that in Nigeria or was that when you came to university?
It's actually in Nigeria, but I played it online. So my first campaign was Play by Post Eberron, because that's the only way we could do it in those days. So it was Play by Post. I actually worked on the dice roll I had to design with JavaScript online to integrate into the website to roll dice so that everybody, not like people would cheat, but to make the dice obvious so the GM sees what we roll, that you don't change your roll, to make it a bit more authentic, and we role played. So that's
brilliant. And your fellow players then were from all around the world?
Mostly Americans, but we had an Australian, so the time zone difference was a challenge. 8 hours behind for me to Australia, about 6 hours ahead. No, 6 hours behind me for America, 8 hours ahead in Australia. So
I just love the way that this game brings people together from all around the world. It's great. So let's come back into the now. Tell me about your crew, the crew that you're GMing for.
What are they doing? What's their crew concept for a start?
Okay, interesting crew. I actually have the crew. I think I have the crew in my bag because it's an interesting crew because, like I said, the characters are things I can naturally bring out based on my culture. Mm. So I got the first crew who is like the captain, inspired by, of course, Firefly, Malcolm.
Malcolm Reynolds, yeah.
But I twisted it to fit the Coriolis theme. So I gave him a very simple name because I have friends. Like I said, it's an Islamic setting, so it's easy. So his name is Al-Rahman. He's the captain, so he's a bit like Malcolm Reynolds, but I twisted it a little bit. Because the nice thing with Coriolis, having black characters in the system looks very authentic, because there are a lot of black Muslims because of the history of our world. So it's so easy and natural. And I bring in easy characters. I have a medic. And the nice thing with Coriolis, you've got this beautiful concept with the faster than light travel and sublight travel.
Yeah.
So you've got the first come who actually left early,
in
their generation ships, and during their journey, their portals were discovered, and other people had arrived.
Yes, yeah. So the Zenithians left early, exactly. And, but the first come started late, but arrived first. Yeah.
So that's the interesting thing, and that allows you to play with concepts. Mm-hmm. So the nice thing is that it brings the idea of the theory of relativity and what happens with the generational ships, and blends it all in. So. And the other thing they've introduced that was quite nice was the game mechanic, whereby you get dice rerolls, but not just rerolling them, but it's woven into the system through prayers.
Yes.
And it's part of the whole system and the setting. So it's both a game mechanic and settings fluff, all woven beautifully.
I really love it because, you know, there's lots of games out there that have got gods in, but those gods hardly exist, whereas In the Third Horizon, you know the gods exist because when you pray to them, good things happen.
Exactly.
And bad things.
And also the other interesting thing, because in Western cultures, like I said, I grew up in a different place whereby I have friends who are scientists, but also religious.
Mm.
Western society sometimes doesn't understand that you could be both religious and scientific. My friends who study astronomy, they look at all the beauty of the universe. To them, it doesn't diminish their faith.
No.
It simply expands it. Well, say, oh, look what we don't yet know. Look what there is to discover. And that's what Coriolis tries to introduce as well, whereby we've got the spacefaring race, they've got technology, they've got medical technology, and they still have their strong beliefs. So it's a nice, you know, like an evolution of faith.
Yeah, no, I really love it for that reason. Can I ask, and again, this might be a bit sensitive, so if you don't want to answer this, I'm just, one of the things that a friend said to me when I was telling them about this, and particularly telling them it was a Swedish game, but with this very sort of Arabian, Middle Eastern feel, my friend said, well, is that not cultural appropriation? Is that the Swedes?
Yes, that's an interesting thing. You see, the cool thing is that I actually come from a mixed cultural background. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes like getting into these stories about cultural appropriation to explain to people that culture, like, one interesting thing, sometimes I like preserving cultures and not even my own, because I talk about world heritage. People don't get that concept. I'm saying, yeah, we're all humans.
Yeah.
And when I see like some recent things when the Brazilian library that got burnt, I felt terrible, because that's world heritage and culture. That's why I look at, if you do justice to the culture because you research, that's the whole thing. It's not appropriation if you research and expose the themes and the culture. It becomes appropriation when you do it for selfish reasons. Now, businesses are there to make money, but it's ethical business. And it's a very popular thing nowadays. People thought, oh, if you're in business, you don't need to be ethical. That's not true. Yes, you can.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. So the fact that a Swedish company took time to invest, and I think they treated the cultures quite nicely. And not just that, they brought one thing that we sometimes miss in Western cultures. And to me, that's very important. The fact that you can be a modern scientist and still be religious, does not diminish your religion, nor does it diminish your ability to be a scientist and study science.
Yeah, that's great. So you're playing tonight.
Yes.
Obviously, your players aren't going to listen to this until after you've played it. So I'm just really curious about the adventure you've got planned for tonight.
Well, it's the characters I've created. So I create these characters. I'm a GM who doesn't like my players to die in the game. But if they do, I've got backup characters. So I usually run at conventions one shots with the same characters to weave a story. Right. So those who follow my games would see that,
that story
be developing over time. So that's what I do.
Okay. And you're not going to give me any clues about what's happening in the adventure?
Well, Coriolis has a dark side, so, yes, which is why the prayers come in handy. And the players will get challenged, and we'll see how the team works, because I especially made the crew, a mixed crew. Mm. So we've got the first come, and we've got the Zenithians, and I added some interesting aspects. I have a biosculpted character there.
All right, yeah.
And I have a character there who does not like biosculpted as well, but he's an important member of the team.
Yeah.
So
we've all got to get on.
Exactly. This is why I added that as well. So that's a nice thing, because it has these little things whereby they are not afraid to discuss prejudice, which does exist. But if you do it in a matured way, because I, like I said, I face a lot of prejudice. So I'm one of the people who I don't cry over it, in the sense that, look, you move on and you learn. And that's part of the experience in life. You meet good people, meet people who are not so good, but you learn from each experience.
Yeah.
That was a really interesting conversation. It was great to catch, someone like Remy in a place like Dragon Meet. That's what it's for, isn't it? You know, Dragon Meet is a great place for people to meet new people who all have, you know, similar passions. And it was lovely to hear him talk about, his love for the game and all the things that we love about the game as well. But the one thing I just wanted to pull out was talking about cultural appropriation. I get a bit annoyed when people accuse others of cultural appropriation, because, people don't own your culture. Your culture is something that is kind of projected. And if somebody else likes your culture and wants to take things from it that they love or they value or they're interested in and want to explore, then I think you should be happy about that. That should be something that is really positive, because there isn't enough of that. You know, falling into a bit of a political soapbox again, but in our multicultural society, where there's such diversity, the thing that we don't have enough of is people really investing in other people's culture. And I think, you know, making someone potentially feel, or run the risk of making somebody feel bad about wanting to look into, invest, take up parts of somebody else's culture is a really bad thing, and we shouldn't allow it. I do take the point that you might get some people who are, you know, doing it for a very commercial, not very ethical reason. They want to take someone's cultural success, say, and turn it into a money spinner for themselves. But I don't think those rare occasions should be used to put even the slightest bit of feeling out there in the zeitgeist that somebody shouldn't embrace somebody else's culture completely wholeheartedly and openly and enthusiastically if they want to, for fear of being accused of being a cultural appropriationist, if that's a word.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, Remy said much the same in a way, didn't he?
Yes, absolutely,
But it is a thing that Coriolis has been accused of. And I think there is a thing about as Remy said, the sort of sensitivity around it. If somebody had taken Arabic culture as a setting, as an element of their setting, and made them exclusively the bad guys, that's probably cultural appropriation. You know, that's probably not treating the culture with the respect it deserves.
I wouldn't even say I disagree. I don't think that's cultural appropriation at all. I think that's just bigotry, and so. They're different things. So you're not appropriating someone's culture there. You're basically saying, see those guys over there in the kaftans and the hoods? They're bad guys, all of them. And that's bigotry, not cultural appropriation, I think.
Fair point. But the beauty of this is, particularly Remy's story is, you know, fascinating. As somebody brought up a Muslim in North Nigeria, you know, who only comes to role-playing games later, and then he finds this game and it almost feels like a game that he can really get behind and really enjoy. Mm-hmm. And you know, if people were put off producing a game like that by the fear of being accused of cultural appropriation, then there'd be somebody there out there who'd never got a game like this that he enjoys as much as Remy does.
Exactly.
So I think you're right. We've got to have the courage of our convictions sometimes.
Completely. And again, you know, so as you say, taking your line there a bit further, then if that hadn't have happened, then, you know, you would have never have met Remy. We would never have had this conversation. It may well be, you know, someone that you keep in touch with on, you know, on all the social media and stuff. So who knows where it goes? And, you know, I don't get to meet many people from Nigeria. So you know, the more people I get to meet from Nigeria and have a good conversation with about something that we mutually love, then bloody hell. I mean, if somebody wants to do something that's going to make that less likely, then they can go and sod off, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. It makes us all a great global community, exactly. Which is what we want to be.
Precisely.
Actually, at the end of it.
Doing nice stuff.
Well, some of us.
Doing nice stuff.
Some of us don't apparently want to be a global community, but most right-thinking people do.
So 51% of 60%.
There, we're getting back into politics. Let's move on.
Anyway, I think I might move to Sweden.
Let's get back to Coriolis.
Sorry, okay, from now on, I apologise. I won't. It's just a bad moment, I guess, for Britain.
Yeah, this
I won't soapbox or go on about it. Anymore,
yeah, this is not a political podcast.
It's not a political podcast, absolutely.
But yeah, let's. You have got a bit of news about the latest adventures of your crew in your Coriolis campaign. So let's hear about that.
Yes, so we've had a bit of a hiatus with November being so busy. But we finally got around to getting around the table last week and had a game, which was great. So if you remember, the end of the last scenario, they'd agreed to assassinate, in effect, a Zelosian ambassador and the representatives he was trying to bring into the war from Sadal. And they brought them on board the Corsair, or the Valley Forge, as they're running it now, under their third transponder. And they murdered them on board the ship, and that was and that was where we left it. They had a good sort of moral debate about, you know, there was one person in there who was a poet who was being used as a go-between, and Norsa had come to like him and was suddenly having a bit of a moral sort of quandary about whether they should kill him or not. In the end, they killed them all, but. There was a good moral debate about it. So the next scenario took up exactly from that position. And the first thing they had to do was clean up the mess and deal with the bodies. But Norsa, having still some misgivings and some sadness about what was going on, wanted to take the bodies to the chapel on board the ship and then bless them and give them the right burial rites with some respect. What he didn't realise was that I had 17 darkness points and...
That's always a terrible situation.
Him dragging the body through the ship and the ship having passengers on it was a situation that was too good to pass up. So so they had two passengers on board the ship, which was a woman called Zina, who was a bride being taken to Sadal for her wedding, and her chaperone, her guard effectively, called Joachim. And so they saw Norsa dragging this dead body through the ship, were obviously a bit perturbed by this. Joachim drew a weapon on them. Carter decided to try and disarm him and got shot through the chest. Had a critical role and survived, but with a hole in his lung. It would have been fatal. But I wanted, because we hadn't played for a while, I wanted to get the game going with a bit of a moment. So when this happened, I took the opportunity to go for a critical wound, because basically he got shot in the chest at point blank range, which is unlikely to be good for you. They managed to save him, put him in the med bay, and they managed to defuse the situation by paying back the fee they'd been given to these guys, because they obviously wanted to get off the ship at this point, and then paying them a couple of thousand birr compensation for their trouble. So anyway, they got them off the ship and managed to leave. They gave the dead people the last rites, and then they dumped them out of the airlock, which doesn't sound quite so respectful at the end of it, but, you know, burial at sea, perhaps. So they were then flying on, and they had some cargo. One bit of the cargo they were carrying were five portable stasis pods with five people in them, in stasis. And they were to deliver these to a location. And they jumped through the first portal on their route to deliver these people, only to find that when they came out of stasis, one of the stasis pods, the temporary pods, which were in the cargo bay, had been opened. And when they looked inside it, they found that the occupant had obviously been moved for some reason, had been pushed around, and had his throat cut, and he was dead. And this is a bit of a, okay, what's going on here? This is all a bit weird. And it turned out, they soon found out, they searched the ship and found they had a couple of stowaways, which were two children, about 11 or 12 years old, who it turns out had obviously gone into the stasis pod because they realised they were going into stasis, had killed the man in the pod. And they suddenly had these kids running around the innards of the ship through the Jeffrey's tubes, all the rest of it. They couldn't catch them and didn't know what to do with them. So they spent some time trying to work out what was going on. They tried to persuade the kids to come out of hiding. And it turned out the kids told them that the people in these stasis pods were members of an abusive group called the Black Brotherhood. And they were taking revenge for all their crimes and terrible things that they'd done. And what had ended up happening after that was they brought out one person at a time. We'd added Roger to the group, one of our players in our Star Trek game, and he'd rolled up a character and was playing Abdelakar. So if you remember, Abdelakar was somebody who had been working with Resim Aldair before, and he was a non-player character who was on board the ship trying to make sure that the crew didn't do anything that their patron would disapprove of. So he was an obvious character for Roger to roll up. So he rolled up Abdelakar, was playing that character. And he's got excellent lie detecting abilities. So then basically asked each of these people in turn, were they members of the Black Brotherhood? Had they done unspeakable things to people? And when the lie detector proved that they were lying, when these people obviously denied it, they summarily executed them on the spot. So there's quite a long scenario about how they manage this, how they manage the children, what they do with all these people. That they then carried on to deliver some of their other cargo, having jettisoned these people into space, having decided that they were going to be evil and didn't deserve justice, rather, other than summary justice. And that's where we ended. But they've now got two groups of people that they're not going to deliver for. One, the bride is obviously going to be late for her wedding now because they've had to delay. That you know they've got to go and find alternative means of transport, and her fiance is a powerful person in Sadal. Mm-hmm. And obviously these five people aren't going to be delivered to where they were expected to go. And that's the way we left it. So building up more and more trouble for themselves as time goes on.
And how many darkness points do you have?
I've got about 15 left now.
Yeah.
And I did. I mean, so one thing as a GM I've noticed, I've not been as good lately in burning the darkness points as I had been earlier on in the game. So I burned five to put the children on the ship. Because they had 22 at the end of the previous scenario, which brought it down to 17. I'm trying to burn them, but I'm trying to do it in interesting ways. But
yeah,
they've still got quite a sump of darkness points waiting for me to spend.
Yeah, and as you know, that can be a terrible, terrible situation to be in if you're a player with a GM with lots of darkness points.
It can be, and there's an interesting thing. So I've been warning the players that in building up this reservoir of dark energy, something bad is going to happen at some point. Because at some point, I'm just going to have to spend a lot, and I don't want it just to feel like, oh, Dave's being a bit of a shit, and he's just making life difficult for the hell of it.
You mean like you felt when I started spending all the...
Yes,
exactly. Bringing out those reinforcements.
Exactly,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also, a conversation, we talk about Rickard on G+. We had a conversation it's about darkness points and how you manage some of that stuff. And he made a really good point that for his games, what he's been doing is when the players roll ones, he's using those as an opportunity to spend darkness points. So when a so when a player rolls a one, as opposed to a six, they know, okay, something bad might be about. You know, this is an opportunity for something bad to happen, and I quite like I quite like that. I haven't tried it yet, but quite I quite like it because it takes away or it takes the edge off the the players feeling that the GM is just being a bit difficult, and you know you've gone through all this time and effort, and you're inches away from the prize that you've been working towards for the whole scenario, for multiple scenarios. And then the GM goes, ha, darkness points. No, doesn't happen. And that's not, that runs the risk of not being great. I don't get the sense that the players, my players, have felt that sense, but I've been quite careful not to feel or look arbitrary in my use of darkness points. So actually, if they roll the dice and the dice rolls a one and the one tells me to spend a darkness point on something, I quite like that. So I might well try that the next time I get my players around the table to play Coriolis.
It might be worth doing that. I'm thinking we've got to be more... I'm trying to spend darkness points, even on little inconsequential things that are just feeling a bit spooky.
Yeah.
To try and, A, spend the darkness points so that I'm not building up too big a stock. But also just to, to add that little bit of strangeness and weirdness into the feeling.
Well, I think my players have enjoyed my use of darkness points the most when they've been more narrative and a bit creepy and just setting the scene. And one example particularly being when they had, early on, they had a Zelosian prisoner that they put into an airlock that they were thinking about punting him out of the airlock. And they ultimately decided not to, to spare him. And then I spent a darkness point to have the ship, the cursed ship, the possessed ship, say, nah, don't want him on board, and just open the airlock and punt him out. And I think those kind of things really add to the game. And it feels to me that my players have enjoyed those much more than when I've just used darkness points in a more traditional sense.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, our hour-long episode is significantly longer than an hour now.
So we're going to come back in the new year with the Grindbone Tournament, and shortly after that, another episode. In between that, I might well put out episodes of Coriolis, the Prison Planet adventure that we recorded in Norfolk.
Yep.
So look out for those. But I haven't even started editing that yet, so that might not happen.
We've just put out the final episode of The Tale of Troubled Spirits. And we have, again, another scenario from Granite Hold, which we recorded in Norfolk as well, which I'll start working on editing. But I think we'll be getting the Coriolis one out probably before we get the next Simbaroom ones going. But you have that to look forward to in the new year, in probably February, I guess, by the time we start broadcasting that one.
So, so I think it's time to wish our listeners a Merry Christmas.
Have a fabulous holiday.
And a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Or indeed, whatever your winter festival is, have a good one.
Indeed. And may the
icons
bless
your
adventures.
Adventures.
We really ought to agree who's going to say that, shouldn't we? Bye, everybody.
Bye. You have been listening to The Coriolis Effect, presented by Fiction Suit with the RPG Gods, with music by Stars on a Black Sea, used with permission of Free League Publishing. Imagery from NASA and the Hubble Space Telescope, brought to you by Wikimedia Commons. Typeface is Code by Font Fabric.